All right, so what's up, everybody? This is Vince from www.dropthedice.com, and with me today, as always, is our chief audio engineer, our East Coast correspondent, and the head of R&D, looking extra shiny and super slick today. What's going on, Rico Losman?
From the words of your son, good. I was editing a piece with him, and you were like, hey, so what's going on, Riley? And he's like, good.
Yeah, and I love that he does that. Even when, because we practice podcasting in the car a lot, because he wants to do the puppy podcast and stuff. One day I'll record it and I'll post it somewhere. And I'm always like, okay, like if we do this, you got to talk. And I do that. And I'm like, so what's going on, RC? Good? All right. You're giving me nothing, boy.
Oh, it was so funny.
And sitting to my left is our head tabletop editor, the newest member of the Drop the Dice team, and the man who's always got a bevy in his hand, Alfie. What's going on, bro?
Cheers. What's going on, everybody?
So we are here. We're going to talk about the gaming experiences that we have. And I think that this is a nice progression from the last podcast where we talked about our top 10 games in 2015. I think anytime you talk about a top 10 list, you struggle with what factors make that a top 10. And a lot of us came down to, is it the experience? Is it, you know, can you judge a game objectively at all? So I think this kind of fits. And we're going to talk about good experiences and bad, as well as some of the experiences that we had at the very beginning of this hobby. So we'll get to that in the second part, but I look forward to that. I think we got some really, really good things coming at you. So, but first, let's talk about what we've been playing. So Rico, why don't we go with you? Because you've always got some amazing things.
Not about amazing, but I played a couple things that I really have enjoyed recently. The first being a game called Mombasa.
Nice.
You probably know and I don't. Who designed this game?
Alexander Pfister. Who designed Atlas Sky?
Okay, that's right. You said that last time, but
I did say that last time.
I always forget. This game had a much bigger impression on me than Isle of Sky did. It to break its many pieces down into something that like you might be able to understand, because there's a lot going on in this game. It's basically four different tracks around this board that you're trying to push up, kind of like Medieval Academy. And the higher you get on each of these tracks gives you stock in those companies. And then each of those companies has a whole ton of like little houses, and you get to put them onto the board a la area control. And the more of those houses that get on there, you multiply by how much stock you have in the company at the end. So you're trying to push up each of these tracks, then have the most stock in the company so you get the most points. So it's a really cool balance between getting up on the tracks that you think are going to have the most houses out on the board, but everyone's also doing that. And the houses that get on the board can also get pushed back into their bank. So you even though one company might have all their houses out in the third round, they could potentially lose houses off the board. And then you're stuck with a company that you have the most stock in that has no houses on the board. So you don't get any points. So you're trying to balance those two things at the same time. It's really slick game. It's a lot of fun.
Sounds really interesting.
Yeah, I'm dying to play this one. I loved Isle of Sky, and this is absolutely what you're talking about. This is so much more in terms of game. Like, Isle of Sky is what, 30, 45 minutes?
Yeah.
45 minutes. But this is a long game, right?
Yeah, it is. It takes about an hour and a half to 2 hours, depending on how fast you play. And I think of it more really, though, as the next step of Medieval Academy. I really like that game. And I really love going up on all of those tracks, but there's not a ton to it, right? You're kind of drafting cards and pushing yourself up the tracks. There's a few actions that you get to do with that, but this one is the feeling of pushing up the tracks, but then so much more card play, hand management, worker placement, area control. I mean, the list goes on, and it really is like what I want from a game that has tracks, I guess.
Did you play Shakespeare?
I did not like that.
Oh, so that has a similar mechanic with moving things up on different characters.
Mm-hmm. But
it's just...
Yeah, it feels similar in Medieval Academy that they just... It feels hollow, right? Like, I don't feel like the actions that moving up those tracks are interesting or have a lot of depth. Or, you know, it felt very flat.
Got it. Sweet. Anything else?
Right after we played Mombasa, we got through a four-player game of Orléans with the invasion.
Nice. So the co-op?
Really, co-op game. Really cool. It's shocking how much space this takes up on your table. It's just gigantic. Everybody has another extra player board. There's two extra boards on there for the scenario. And the gist of it is, instead of collecting shit for yourself, you're pushing all of the things that you gather onto these boards to defend the city against an invasion of bad guys. And everyone has their own personal objective on top of all of these objectives in the middle. And the personal objectives are ridiculous. I had one that had an entire extra board that I had to fill up with characters. Another guy had an objective that had a new thing he had to give to the bank in each of the 16 rounds that we played. So he got this card and looked at it and was like, "What? This can't be an objective. Like, there's 18 things on here." And it turns out it's like a new sacrifice he had to give every single round. It's ridiculous, and it seems almost unwinnable in the first 10 out of the either 16 or 18 rounds you play.
Sure.
And then somehow in the last three rounds, you start to put it all together, and it finishes really satisfyingly. One of the guys we played with commented, like, this must have been a nightmare to play test because there's so many options. You can gather whichever of the different workers you want to and kind of like make your own strategy. And I feel like it must have been so hard to balance, and they somehow pulled it off. And it's really impressive. I love that you can now play this game in so many different ways. It's really cool.
Yeah, that sounds super cool. Early on didn't make it to my top 10, but I think if I probably would have had another player or two with it, it probably would have gone up there. Also, I really want those wooden pieces.
is that stopping you from getting the game?
Dude, it absolutely is, yeah.
Well,
it's such a difference, because I was looking at it too, and like at first I thought that you were wrong, that no, like it absolutely still comes with those, but it totally doesn't. It's just wooden chits.
Yeah. I don't think that would be as fun. I have such a fun time stacking them after I play them all, and then I kind of like stack them in a big tower, and then I put them into my bag at the end of my turn.
Well, like even like when you put them in the bag and you're kind of shaking the bag, wood makes a sound, and it's one of those that all goes into the game.
Yeah, definitely.
And I know it's funny, because for a game like this, it absolutely wouldn't impact gameplay.
No, it wouldn't. But they actually feel really slick when you have the stickers on each side of the wooden disc. Instead of it being a rough wooden disc, it feels sleek. And something about that when you're playing them is really satisfying.
Okay, so have you played?
That sounds so lame, but
no, I completely understand. Like, components can totally change a game, especially. I know what you mean about there's a difference between like having a wooden disc and having a wooden disc that has like a sticker on it, because it's smooth and it feels fancy.
Even in like something like Harbor, they absolutely could have used cardboard chits, but everybody has these wooden squares that represent their, you know, their things. And then your Beeple is this little sailor guy.
Mm-hmm.
All of that helps, especially for like a small game like that. Have you played Village?
I have. Village is freaking cool, man.
It's okay, like a really cool game. I haven't played it yet. I really want to play it. And Stronghold's re-releasing it this year because they bought the rights, but that's beside the point. Village, as far as I can tell, is similar in the sense that there is all the stuff going on in that game, and it's, but that it kind of weaves it all together really well. Do you see like that in Invasion, or does Invasion feel pretty different?
Invasion surprised me in the sense that it's really just spaces to put your stuff. You're essentially doing almost the same thing you're doing in the normal game, but in this one, it gives you places to collect goods. So instead of at the end of the game, you have a pile of your own resources that you collected on the board. In this one, you collect them and then you put them elsewhere to defend the city. So it actually didn't feel starkly different. It's just now you have something to do with what you collect, which is interesting. Yeah, I couldn't see a ton of parallels between this and Village.
Okay.
But it's really well designed.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. And so for you listeners out there who really want to go buy Invasion, Rico took the plunge and imported this himself.
Yeah, I would say that it's worth it, especially if you have anyone else who wants to buy it. When you split the costs of shipping, the actual game like isn't any more than you'll pay for it when it comes out in the States.
Oh, okay. And then is there plans for this to come out in the States?
Mm-hmm. I believe that they're in talks right now. It's in production and probably will be here by fall.
Holiday.
Yeah, probably fall.
Sweet. Alfie, what have you been playing?
We played Fury of Dracula 3rd Edition this past week. That's a lot of fun.
I'm thinking. We've had like an hour for you to think about this.
Yeah, but I've been thinking about other things. It was a ton of fun. It was a good game. I liked it a lot. Didn't hit with everybody in our game group.
Which we'll talk about in a minute.
I was Dracula. And there was a part of me where I kind of wanted to make Z-Man Dracula because I kind of wanted all of us to like chase him and just beat the heck out of him. But then as I was reading the rule book, I realized I can't explain to somebody how to be Dracula.
Yeah.
It's not complicated in the end. Like we were talking about afterwards, like the rules and mechanics of the game themselves are not complicated. It's just a lot.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I can't explain this to anybody in any short amount of time. So I was Dracula. Ended up my first – like my, where I placed my guy at the start ended up being a really bad spot. I didn't realize I was really close to two guys. I was two spots away from both of them. And so it was just stupid error on my part, and I got totally trapped and just slaughtered. And then I ended up making a mistake that cost me the game. And that's something I actually liked about this game. They even say in the rule book, Dracula makes an error and anybody catches it, and I caught it, then you have to show – everybody where you are now. I think you clear off all you like your encounters you have, and then you like also
everything Dracula has.
Yeah. And then you also you take five damage.
Okay, that sucks.
And that's it's like if you make a single mistake as Dracula, like you're done. So you better know the rules really well, because even like saying like, oh, I wasn't allowed to play that card in combat, that could be considered a Dracula error.
Gotcha.
You know, and I ended up skipping over a town on accident. I didn't see Nuremberg on the map. And so I was like, oh, and I went from one place to Munich. I went from Leipzig to Munich. Nuremberg's in between it. And then like three turns later, somebody went to Nuremberg. I was like, there's a spot there. I was like, crap. Like, oh, you know, it wasn't – I didn't need to skip over it, you know, to like get away from anybody. And I think I would have been in the clear. Even if they had found that, I think I would have been able to get away. However, I made that. And then we already like – 2 hours in, probably.
Yeah, maybe. You already had a pretty...
I had two encounters. 13. Dracula can take 15 damage. I had 13 on me, but I had all my feed cards that get you the health. I could go to Castle Dracula. And
is that
point,
where you were going?
No, I was headed down towards Italy. I was going to jump over. I was going to run as far away as I could, do a couple feeds, and then just hit Castle Dracula up later.
Okay.
I felt comfortable... Right before I realized I made the mistake, I felt comfortable that I could win this game and they wouldn't be able to catch me ever again.
Yeah.
Once I was able to sneak out and get away, I felt
so close to adding the next, was it Despair?
Despair, yeah. So,
do you feel like you went easy on them at all?
No. No, I just made a couple stupid moves.
Gotcha.
That's all it was.
I thought it was pretty cool. I love, and you kept saying this as, if the people find Dracula, they're supposed to kill him.
Yeah, like the people are much stronger than Dracula is.
And
not necessarily at the start. If you run into somebody on the first or second turn, Dracula has a really good shot. Like you saw.
Yeah, I got my ass kicked.
I slaughtered Mina Harker, but I also had that pounce that let me do 4 damage. So yeah. You started with 4 damage. I felt I actually had – I played some good moves. It was just – it was the starting stuff really messed me up. You know, that was kind of unfortunate, but it was, I had a ton of fun with it. And
I liked it. I liked that all the people had really different powers. Mm-hmm. Like Mina, I felt like shouldn't fight. Like she should be used for her power.
Absolutely.
I should run.
And you used it really well. Yeah, you stayed in that center region where you could hit all the different.
Get to like three different regions pretty easily. So I'd go to a region, someone would meet up with me. I'd ping at night and sometimes he was there, sometimes he wasn't. And then, yeah. You know, and then I would kind of like move around again. But by doing that, I never pulled items, so I sucked in battle.
Yeah.
But that's all I really needed to do, and I had fun just doing that.
Yeah, I would like to play as both Dracula again and as one of the hunters.
Well,
I think
after
that'd be a ton of fun.
I think any of us could probably do it, but Z-Man absolutely was like, I'll totally do it. And yeah. he was ready to put it on his top 10.
Yeah, he really, really liked it.
Which apparently hit a movement in Z-Man's game because he also loves Spectrops. So, that's what I want to talk about. I feel like this is pretty different than Spectrops.
Yeah.
Before we do the comparison between Spectrops, you Let's talk about combat, because combat was my, besides the aesthetics of the game, which are just gorgeous.
Yeah, the whole board is, like, everything is just beautiful.
Oh, yeah, top notch. The combat was my favorite part of the game.
I think the combat is definitely, like, super unique.
It's really cool.
It's very cool, and I think it's very, very unique. I can't think of another game that does anything like that.
Well, it's got, like, that cool, like, there's these symbols on these sides of these cards.
Mm-hmm.
The symbols remind me of rock, paper, scissors.
Yes,
But there's, like,
nine
options.
Because I can't cancel out their cards, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So you've
got, yeah, so it's, like, it's a one-way rock, paper, scissors. I'm trying to, like, guess what they're doing.
Exactly. So you're trying to guess what we're doing in this almost rock, paper, scissors game. But then each of those cards that you're playing to do rock, paper, scissors have crazy awesome powers. And if you're able to block one of those cards or not, it oftentimes can be the difference between winning or losing the game or the combat. And that adds such a weightiness to the combat. It's so much fun, and it's so tense trying to guess, hey, I know that they have this punch card, try and block that. And a really great back and forth between Rangers and Dracula.
Definitely there comes a point where it's like, if you're Dracula, don't ever run into multiple of them.
Yeah.
Unless you know you have some event cards that help you.
I think aside from the hidden movement, it's nothing like Spectrops.
No, yeah.
But that's enough to make it a valid comparison.
I feel like when you compare games, you can compare like Spectrops, Letters to Whitechapel, and Fury of Dracula as they're the hidden movement deduction games. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. I think the feeling of the game is pretty different. Spectrops, I felt, was more racy.
It's more time consuming. Yeah,
more that's
like
true.
We're rushing. Yes. Like you're rushing to get, well, not you, but you're rushing to get the objectives, and we're rushing to find you. And this one, I felt the first round, even Bus was like, "Well, I'm just gonna search," and so we were kind of just searching, and then then you kind of start going around. And
Spectrops has Spectrops has like a capture the flag almost mechanic. You're just trying to hit the bases and get back. Mm-hmm. So it is a race, like. The agent is just racing to get to all the different places before the hunters can grab them. In Dracula, you're trying to run away from them the whole time. Maybe get into combat.
Your
like,
only objective is to up the that
up the influence, which I can get by killing you or playing certain cards, give it to me, and then events might. But it's the encounters I put on locations, like maturing vampires and things like that can get me influence. And that's one of the big ways, I think, as well as if 3 weeks has gone by, you win in like three turns, even if you have zero influence.
Sweet. Anything else?
No, I really liked the game. That was a lot of fun, but
this is Alfie's game too. So it's exciting.
Yeah.
He's got a couple more AAA titles coming, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. Okay. So for me, we played a 4-player game of Cthulhu Realms, which I'd only done it at 2-player before, and this is a lot of fun, man.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
So in the 4-player, when you do damage, you deal to both your neighbors, right?
You do, and then the mechanic of like you have two markets where you can buy from, but then there's two other ones that are almost like laughing at you because most of the time the cards you want are ostensibly there because of course they are.
Naturally.
But it was great.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Yeah,
and it's quick. It's super quick that the player elimination part like doesn't mean anything because you're out of the game for like 5 minutes. And the moment one person falls, since you're doing damage to everybody, that means the other two are going to fall pretty quickly.
That means now every turn everybody's taking damage except you. Yeah.
Gotcha.
But it was really cool. Super super small game. Totally suggest that to anybody. And I'm curious. There's no official Star Realms rules for 4, or there are?
There are.
Okay, is it the same thing?
No, I don't believe so. I've only read through the rules once, but Star Realms actually comes with a whole other sheet that's just for multiplayer, and it has 4 different variants for different player counts.
Got it. Okay.
There's one where you're defending. There's one where you attack people across from you. There's one where you all have like collective amounts of points or whatever. And I know people are kind of mixed on all of them, but I haven't played any, so I can't really comment. But they give you quite a few.
So from what I've heard, people don't really like Cthulhu Realms that much. But I feel like Star Realms is a pretty popular game, and I'm wondering why there's that like difference there.
Okay, so
because I've never played Star Realms.
Well, one, it's first, so people have that attachment to it being first. And right. two, and this is what I actually think that it is that it has a fantastic app.
Oh.
One of the best board game apps you can get is Star Realms. It is fast. It has an awesome, like,
so people game. Like the game on the iPad or whatever, yeah, exactly. Not necessarily the card game.
No, I think I think people do like the card game, but you couple that with like, oh, I played Star Realms, you know, with my significant other, with my friend, and then I went home and I played more Star Realms. I love Star Realms. Like it makes it so easy to play that game, and the app is so good. I put more time into that than any other board game app because it has a really, really good single player.
I also think most people do like Cthulhu Realms.
Do they? I haven't heard anybody say anything positive about it.
I think most people from what I've heard say it has a little bit more depth than Star Realms, but like, why would you get it instead
yeah,
of
there you go. So yeah, okay. that and maybe I take it has a little bit more depth is people saying it's better. They're both super, super fun games. And ultimately, I mean, I prefer Cthulhu Realms because I think the art is better and I think the theme is better.
Okay.
Star Realms is kind of base space without anything else.
All right.
But I mean, they're both great. I would absolutely buy Cthulhu Realms.
So I mean, I guess I understand because I've played Cthulhu Realms. I like Cthulhu Realms, so I feel no reason to go play Star Realms.
Exactly. And that's what I thought at first, other than the fact that it was Cthulhu, so I wanted to get it. Okay, so but the big one, we played City of Remnants for the third or fourth time. And I love this game. It's still in my top 10. I think it's amazing. I love how imbalanced it is, even though one of the guys in our group seemed to hate it. I did ask the game designer about a question that we had, and it turns out that we did play something a little bit wrong.
But you said you thought it was balanced?
Imbalanced.
Imbalanced, yeah. Oh, very imbalanced, yeah.
Well, yeah, everybody has different powers.
Yeah, but from everything I've read, because I did the same. After we played the game, me and Ben's both like separately went and looked on like facts and things on like BGG. I went to BGG. I don't know where you went. Yeah, and I looked at like people asking questions about rules and things like that. It seems like the two best factions are yellow and green. Like those are the two people talk about.
Yeah, but I think it's funny how many people think that how many people have played red the right way and succeeded at it.
Oh, I didn't read any of those.
Where you're supposed to just be aggressive as red. When I traded, I sucked, and so did Boss. But there's plenty of people who did it, and it worked out for them.
Okay.
So but people who have no idea what you're talking about?
So City of Remnants is a game where you each play different warring gang factions in this kind of futuristic... I think it's supposed to be like L.A., but it's like some weird city. And
it's like
there's
a Blade Runner type game.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's these like alien policemen that patrol every round, and they're finally obnoxious at four players.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. That's cool.
Every turn, people will have to do multiple fights against them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember both times I played, for some reason,
we it never happened, right?
To get improbably lucky, and the police never hit us.
Yeah.
Two times.
So we all lost horribly to Z-Man, which the same thing. We lost horribly to you, though, which seems to be whenever you win, because even when you won, whoever wins by quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I just think it's so much fun. It does deck building. It does resource management. You have this weird area control where you're building up these buildings that have special powers. Mm-hmm. You're drafting different people for your gang and different items, which I didn't draft any items for this game, and I think I did better off than the last time because I actually had a lot of buildings.
Okay. Yeah, you were doing well.
Just Z-Man.
You were in second.
Yeah, but Z-Man was just so far ahead. And then you didn't give up, but you more or less gave up and were like, let's just go at it.
I egged him to come attack me because he should have. Like the smart thing for him to do to win that game and make it, you know, the best thing for him to do was come and just slaughter all my guys because – he was winning every battle he was in, and I had just a bunch of guys out there doing nothing. So, and I had a lot of buildings too. So he could easily just come and like he would get all the buildings, he would kill all my guys, and so that's what he did. Was I egged him to come attack me, and then he brought all of his guys and did. And then I attacked him back. Like I did, I was, because I was basically out of it. I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to attack you back now. And yeah. I did. And then
so the game. Some minor annoyance to him.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And then Busted like checked out because he was just getting slaughtered.
Right. He checked out. That's so weird.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that later.
But I still love it. I think it's awesome. I think it's so much fun and just so different than anything I've really played. It, I don't know. It touches me in ways that not many other games can do.
Does it remind you of Quantum?
No, it doesn't. Other than the fact that we play them in the same night.
Okay.
Bless you, whoever that was. No, it doesn't. I can see why it would, but it's so different. Quantum is pretty straightforward in what you're doing.
Sure.
Okay, so what do you want to play, Rico?
I bought a new game. It's on its way, and everything about this game makes me like excited.
Is this the gavel?
And warm and giddy inside, and that's because it has a wooden gavel, and it's about the UN and negotiating deals. Everything just, oh man, it's
perfect. What is this? The game sounds awesome.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. The art looks pretty cool too.
So I haven't played it yet, but I think I can summarize it really quickly. Right. The game is called Article 27. It's a negotiation game where you are all countries, one of the six countries in the Security Council of the UN, and you're trying to pass
articles.
Articles, I think. Yeah, no, that's not right. You're trying to pass something in the UN, and so each round, one of you gets to act as the main person. And there's a UN term for this as well, and I don't know it. And so you get the little wooden gavel, and you get to propose what amendments are going to be on as a part of your article. And then the other players get to have to negotiate. Like, hey, I want this proposal to be a part of the article, and you know, let's have this oil be a part of the article. And everybody has a different interest in what they want to have passed and what they don't want to have passed. So
yeah.
You're trying to make deals with everybody to get the best thing for you passed. And then it passes, the gavel passes to the next person. So everybody gets to have their turn to be the lead person to get different stuff passed. It's just straight
diplomacy
and negotiation, but each round takes 6 minutes. So it's 6 minutes per player. Seems pretty short.
Pure negotiation.
The player boards look amazing. It has a wooden gavel. It has the same kind of art that you find in Stockpile. So I'm really excited about this.
So in this game, you're trying to pass things that benefit you, but also like ally with people and negotiate and say, well, hey, if you back me on this, I'll back you on yours.
Well, you can add in different parts. So it might be something that doesn't benefit you at all, but it's like, hey, you know, I'll add this proposal in there. Mm-hmm. And you vote.
Like a writer?
Yeah. Well, they're all different proposals. So you say, I'm going to add this proposal, you know, and you vote yes on the whole agreement going through. So
this is from Stronghold Games.
Yeah.
Which they're pretty solid. I mean, everything I have from them is great.
There was a card game that came out. I mean, I don't know when it came out, but we had it as kids. Pit? Called Demo Crazy. It's like Democracy, but Demo Crazy.
Nice.
It was a card game that sounds a lot like this. Of you have, you know, you draw your cards, you have your hand or whatever, and in there are going to be different cards you can play. And the whole point of the game is you're trying to get like colored gems, like red Moncala pieces, blue Moncala pieces, yellow. You know, there's different colors, and you're trying to collect a bunch of them by playing different cards that then like change the rules of the game. So it you know, almost sounds like a very like bad word, because it wasn't a good game. This sounds like a really good version of that, just like a diplomacy negotiation game that seems to be really quick. So
yeah, this has it at 30 minutes playtime. Sweet. Awesome, man. Anything else?
That's it.
All right, so I'll go next. I am dying to play Study in Emerald still. Martin Wallace game. It's about Cthulhu and Sherlock Holmes. If that alone doesn't excite you, then I don't know what will. I mean, the board looks crazy. It's a little bit older, so I'm curious to see how it plays. But supposedly the second edition streamlines things to make it updated a little bit more. Martin Wallace is known for his complications. You played Brass, right?
Mm-hmm.
You said that was one of the heaviest things you've ever done?
Yeah, at the time it like destroyed my brain.
Nice. I mean, it reminds me of like playing like Asgard and Materia in the same night, which is just a bad idea. Mm-hmm. So the other one I want to play is Club Zen, which is a Euro game from TC Petty III. TC Petty designed Viva Java Dice as well as Xeno Profiteer. And this guy, I mean, we talk about people making games that aren't like anything else. This guy's making games that no one else is making. And he doesn't do it a lot. They're not necessarily like my favorite, like none of them are in my top 10, but they're all incredible and they're all unique and they're all, they might be, you know, they're kind of things that are like, oh, this is a really cool game in my collection.
What's this game called?
Club Zen. So the whole game,
I think, is a Euro special for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. The game is you go to a resort and you're trying to relax. And I believe, I don't know a whole lot about it, I believe you start with so many stress tokens on your player board. And you have to go to different activities throughout the club to remove those stress tokens,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of, which seems like kind of a takeaway from Xeno Profiteer, this idea of making your hand smaller to complete different actions. But there's a social aspect of the game where if I can convince you to come get a massage with me, we'll remove more stress
together. Right, because you have a friend.
Yeah. It's going to be in the biggest box Dice 8 Me's ever made, so it'll be bigger than the Brewcrafters box, which has me even more intrigued because Brewcrafters has a shitload of stuff in that box.
So that means this is a big game.
This is a big game.
Because those other two games you mentioned exactly. are smaller
games. So that's the other thing, too, is Viva Java Dice is pretty small footprint. Xeno Profiteer, it's a card game. This guy making a board game, I'm absolutely there. I really want to try this. This should come out December. Again, it's a Kickstarter.
Definitely excited to play both those games. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm on board for anything this guy's doing.
So it definitely sounds like a unique game.
All right, Alfie, what do you want to play?
I recently purchased a couple games. I only have a couple games I wanted to buy. I'm also talking about one of them, Glass Road, wasn't available anywhere, so I'm just going to wait on that.
Oh, you didn't buy it. I was looking at Glass Road up in my collection the other day, and I just had a thought of like that you guys probably missed it a lot. And not to like rub it in, but just that we had so much fun playing.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Oh, so much fun. And
that actually might go on.
Depot has it. I just
okay, I was gonna say Depot has it.
It's hard to justify on when I don't have money to support an addiction. It's hard to justify spending that extra money.
I absolutely
support like local. Like I bought most of my games from game stores, but right now it's hard to do, especially when it's such a difference. Mm-hmm. So Glass Road wasn't available. So the other one I really wanted was Viticulture Essential Edition. Got that. Super excited about that coming.
Which I told him he needs to buy Tuscany immediately before that goes out of print.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll get that. Here's the thing. I got Viticulture Essential Edition for cheaper than where you can get Tuscany for. Tuscany everywhere is like flat 40. Then you got Viticulture for like 38 or 39. So it's like it's hard to justify buying an expansion when it's more than what you got the game for.
Well, and so you have Essential Edition, which comes with
some of the stuff in Tuscany.
Yeah, and it comes with the most simple of the.
But your point about the boards, I think, is what would demand that you get Tuscany. This coming from a guy that doesn't have it, but
yeah,
the board is game
changer. I want to make cheese.
I know, like, I know at some point I'm gonna get Tuscany for sure. That was actually when I knew they were making an Essential Edition. I was hoping that the original editions of Viticulture that were still like out there people were selling would become cheaper now because there's no longer demand.
Tuscany?
So then I could get that for a little bit cheaper and then get Tuscany and the full Tuscany would be worth it.
Yeah, because now you're double dipping a bit
and that also bothers me just a little bit.
Okay, so if we're talking about things that irk you, I have a thought about Essential Edition. It says that the expansions in the Essential Edition are handpicked by Uwe Rosenberg, but I think that they either have a huge miss here or they intentionally left this out. But Tuscany or Viticulture, the board is double-sided. One side has printed words for what the action spaces are. It tells you what they do. The other one gets rid of all of the words. So you just have this like clean looking board.
That's what we used, right?
No, we used the one with the words.
Oh, did we?
With the words. Yeah.
Okay, I can't remember.
It still looks clean. It just has words there.
Yeah.
when they reprinted, when they made Essential Edition, in my mind, there is no reason why you don't print one side of the board with the four seasons that you can play and one side of the board with the, you know, with the original boards.
So yeah.
In the Essential box, you can play.
Right.
That just makes sense to me. So it's either that they didn't think of that, which sounds unlikely because it's Stonemaier, or they
right.
knowing that you're going to get Essential and then go, you know what? I really want that freaking board. And
yeah. Awesome. And I hate that type of stuff.
Me too.
it's that money grab that, because you know people are going to do it. You know if somebody loves this game, they're absolutely going to grab Tuscany, and
they released Essential so that you wouldn't have to buy both, and it's
right. I think Essential is for not us.
I disagree.
Okay.
Who do you think Essential's for?
It's for the player. It's for the person that doesn't want everything. Who's okay with, like, who's not going to be on BGG counting their plays, and who's not going to...
But you would think the Essential Edition would come with, like, the best expansions, the ones that make the game the best, and they yeah. probably... They're probably some really good ones. I don't know what...
But this isn't, like... Ones this, are isn't, in there, but... this isn't, like a 10th anniversary edition of a game, like Ticket to Ride, right? Where it gives you all these ridiculous components. This is literally just a reprint with some expansions added into it already, right?
Right. Yeah.
This isn't like a signature edition. Some sort of like
I black would still box. Expect the best one. So like a black box or an anniversary one would probably come with everything. Or
yeah, and then
some specialized
for that.
Stuff. Right.
You said you paid $38 for that. Like
right, but the point is if they left out a module that was an extra board with a bag of cows and the cheese thing, which, you know, that's like one of the modules, if they left that out, then I would agree with you that, yes, this is the expansion that you don't get everything, that it's not for those people. But it simply is they could have printed a different picture on the other side of the board that's already double-sided. Like it's not a huge thing to add this in there. And that's, that's what I'm saying. It seems... so obvious to just put them both in there, and they didn't, and I think it's pretty intentional.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't disagree. It was just kind of for the sake of discussion.
Sure, of course.
Plus, like, as a company, like, Stonemaier seems to be pretty about the people and just the way that they approach Kickstarter and communication, so it's still a company.
But yeah, I agree. They do seem to be good about the people, but it is still a business, and businesses have...
And you know, I'm pretty sure it's out of his house, actually.
Yeah, which I can... I understand it. Absolutely, I understand it. Doesn't necessarily mean I like it.
Exactly.
You know?
That's how I put it. I am in no ways going to stop supporting them or buying their games because I suspect
right.
that this is the reason they did it. You know,
I mean, but, we have three fucking versions of...
Yeah.
Psych coming in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
the another game I got was I purchased another core set for Game of Thrones, the card game second edition.
Awesome. That's amazing.
So pretty excited for that.
I was goading you last time we talked.
You were.
You want to talk about that's absolutely number three on my list right now.
I feel like
Study Emerald.
Oh,
Vacuum Club's
okay.
Game of Thrones core set.
Yeah. And the next week, next Thursday, the new chapter pack comes out. So
there will be chapter packs before the start.
Yeah,
packs.
There's the way they're doing it is they're doing three chapters deluxe, three chapters deluxe.
Sweet.
So in March is when the Wolves expansion is supposed to come out.
Yeah.
The third game you talked about on the last podcast, and that is Prodigal's Club.
Nice.
Right?
I thought you were going to say my number one.
Orleans?
No.
Again, if we can find the wooden chips, then maybe.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot. Yeah, I don't know if they're going to make those. Anyways, Prodigal's Club. Super cool.
Super excited. I mean, I'm excited to play this. I'm excited to push our bodies together and make this one massive board.
Yeah,
I'm excited to play. It's texting Beth. I'm excited to like play the base, like play Prodigal's Club, and then also play it with Last Will.
Yeah, I just have no idea what that thing will look like. It looks big already.
It's big. It has more individual boards. I think I said this than any other game that I've played.
Yeah, I'm
super. Each person has two player boards, and then the middle has five boards.
Yeah, it's super cool. He texted me that, and I was just like, oh, are you freaking kidding? Like, you, this is going to be so great.
Yeah.
This is going to be the year of Alfie as it's going right now.
It's not. Because, again, like I said, I have a very, very short list of games I want to buy, and I just bought almost all of them. So, and it was because I wanted to get the uncool stuff that they do. If you do over $100, you get free shipping. I was like, I'm absolutely going to do that.
Yeah.
And then I originally went on to look to see, like, the chapter pack to see when that would get shipped because I wanted that. But then I was like, you know what, because it's a little bit cheaper. I was like, I'll pay the $15 at Outpost and pick it up there. That way I can get it that Thursday.
Yeah. Okay, sweet. That's
great.
Yeah, that's super exciting. All right, Alfie, let's just stick with you. What confuses you?
We touched on this just a little bit in this podcast. I've noticed a trend. It's not necessarily confusing at all because I totally get it. But a lot of times in the game, when you come to the point in the game where you feel like there's no chance of you winning, you check out. You know, like it happens a lot. I'm not saying it's it always happens, but it happens a lot in games. And I think it can happen to anybody where you're going along, all of a sudden you realize like there's no way of you winning. You're no longer trying then anymore, you know? You're just going through motions in a sense. I've noticed it since the beginning. Like when you're playing Settlers of Catan, like back in the day, and you're playing in there after, 30 minutes, you're like, oh man, somebody's already got 5 points. So I'm still sitting here with my regular two and I'm not getting any rolls like this. I'm just not having fun anymore. I think it might come down to that of there comes a point in the game where if you can't win, maybe you're not having fun sometimes. And I've noticed that with our group specifically. Like City of Remnants got to a point where for me, it wasn't really fun anymore playing because there was no way I was going to win anything. There's no way I could even win a battle against Z-Man. So it was more, I was just like excited to see what he was going to do. I was excited to see like his big combos of cards and the crazy dice he was rolling. Mm-hmm. But just that like checking out aspect of games, I wonder if it's something for specific people, like it happens more consistently in certain people, or if there's any way we can like curtail that checking out.
Well, I think that one of the primary drivers behind checking out is game length. I think that people don't check out of games they know that they are losing if they know that game is ending soon.
Agreed.
Okay. But you know what I mean? If you know you're going to lose, but you have an hour, 2 hours more to play, like, what the hell is the point? And I think that is the internal process that people go through to check out, you know?
Right. Oh, like you've talked about Letters of Whitechapel.
Yeah.
Did you check out in that game?
At points. I checked out every time two of the players started trying to do the combinations and permutations of where he could have gone because they're endless.
Right.
And spend 5 to 10 minutes mapping them out. I'm like, it's literally playing the lottery. Like, pick one, it doesn't matter. Your guess isn't any better here or there. So at those moments I checked out. But I think that we all have said this so many times about like it's about the play length, you know, like it's short enough where I don't care if I win or I lose. And I think that's the crucial part here is the play length determines that. If it's a really long game and someone knows, then you've got a higher likelihood that they're going to peace out.
Okay. Because I know, so we played Fury of Dracula, right? And there's a point where one of the guys, towards the end, like, he was done with the game completely. He didn't want to play it anymore. Like, he was glad it was over and not in, like, a good way. And it was interesting.
Okay, all right. Well, I mean, we all know it's bust. So why was he so pissed? Like, what did
I don't know. He felt like he wasn't.
Hit you.
He felt like he wasn't doing anything. I thought it was interesting because Elder Alfie literally did nothing. He was never in a combat.
Yeah,
he
was, that was funny.
He Elder was Alfie running really all nothing. Over like the right side of the board. He was constantly checking there in case I went there, and so he was having to do a lot of that. And so he never got into a combat. He never did anything. And I understand how it can be boring if you're like, oh well, you moved to Marseille? Are you here? You know, yeah, Shrek, are you here? And it's like, no, I'm not, and I never have been. So. And they're like, oh, wall supply. Like, I get that the game can be kind of, I guess someone can, you can find it boring. Absolutely. Like, don't get me wrong. I think I was disappointed, not in him, but it was disappointing that someone found it boring. That, well, like, it'll be hard to play that game with him again. You know?
Yeah, agreed.
Sure. And that's, I think that's where I want to come down to it. Of like, it's not like, oh, well, you suck because like you didn't like the game or because you checked out. It's like, well, now like a game that I like and I'd love to play again, like I'm not going to be able to bring it to the table with him. And I think that's more of like the part that it like that sucks, you know? When you find a game that somebody doesn't like, it's hard to bring it back.
I think one, you would because he's boss and he would let you.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want to, like, he does.
If he didn't have fun, already.
Yeah, like, absolutely, in no way do I want to, like, make someone play a game that
I think it's interesting. I usually am engaged the whole time, and I wonder if it's because most of them are mine.
That's a good question.
That's a topic all in and of itself.
But also, I think maybe because I own so many of them that when I'm playing something else, I know.
You want to give that game and the person the respect that they give you for so many countless games.
Exactly. Yeah, like you talk about, like the what the fuck did we play where you wanted to stop playing like immediately? Because he always talks about it. Was it The Hobbit?
Yeah. But I played.
You get the point. So like
it was because of the crowd, and I can read the crowd
for sure. But I wanted to give Z-Man, like, he wanted to finish his game, and I at the point I maybe owe love letter. But I knew, like, oh, like, you spent money on this. Like, it's your first time playing it. I don't mind giving you the respect to finish this or whatever. You know, it's your decision. I wonder is if that clouds me from checking out of something that I might earlier.
It's possible. I feel like I usually don't check out games. Even if I've realized I can't win, even if I'm not really having a great time, I try to find something else. Like I said, City of Remnants, I wasn't really having a great time. But I'm like, all right, well, I can get excited about something else. Like, oh, Z-Man's got some crazy stuff. Like, let's see how fast he can slaughter me. Like, that type of thing, I'm forcing that on there.
Then that brings me to another point of me and you are probably the least competitive, at least outwardly.
Agreed.
Z-Man and Bus are absolutely competitive to the nth degree.
I mean, I can
is
be
it that
for sure, but where, yeah.
And Z-Man is probably a little more lighthearted than Bus. Is it that where if they realize they can't win, since they're so competitive, it's hard for them to keep playing? Okay.
All right, so I have a thought, right? In competitive games, check out if it meets the criteria I said before, which is it's really long and you know you can't come back. Cooperative games, I think it happens when you feel like you don't have an impact or your voice doesn't really matter. And it's not that nobody wants to listen to you. It's that you have other people who are running the show. You know what I mean?
Right, saying, right. Hey, agree.
Go here, do this. We've got our strategy. We're good. And at that point in cooperative games, you can be like, why am I here? Why does anything that I'm doing really matter? Because, you know, I could be a mute and you would just tell me what to do and it would be fine. So I think that quarterbacking is where the problem can be for co-op games. So is it that, you know, you guys had like a plan in motion and Bus just felt, you know, like it didn't really matter what he did because you were just going to tell him anyways?
No, because I feel like for the most part, people were making their own decisions in Fury, especially like,
There was a good discussion about should we do this? Should we do this?
They would discuss, be like, oh, well, hey, like, let's try to do this. Then say like, all right, Bus, let's meet up over here so that I can ping the region to see if, you know, Dracula's here. Or Elder Alfred was like, all right, well, I'm going to stay and kind of like almost baby guard Castle Dracula. Like, I'm going to come over here and see if he came this way. Everybody was doing their own. They were all making their own actions.
Right.
So I don't think it was that. I think there's just a lot of like downtime in that game where you're really not, you're just running around, and I can see why somebody would not enjoy that.
Well, the reason I talk about like being competitive is like Impulse was perfect because he was getting like antsy, but then the moment it became apparent that it was between him and Kane, that he checked right back in.
Yeah, but look at like Blood Rage. I guess in Blood Rage, for the most part, we were all really close to each other until the very last turn.
Yeah, it's like an hour game.
Yeah.
Although Impulse was like an hour. Was it not?
It was longer than an hour.
But that was sick with four people.
It took a long time.
That was a lot of fun. What?
Here's me checking out.
All right.
Moral of the story, it's disappointing when you realize that someone just doesn't enjoy a game, you know. And I think a lot of times you can tell that by them checking out in the game, even when it's not a matter of they're gonna lose, or, you know, because that's something you can understand. Like, we're all competitive in a sense. Yeah, I go into every game hoping I win, trying to win.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm also, you know, we're having fun as a group doing it. But so when you realize that someone's checking out, even though their team's winning, like, you realize, like, they probably just don't really enjoy that game. And so that's, you know, that stinks, because, you know, well, you know, I'll play it with other people, you know, like, that's how that goes, I suppose.
So I this is like Forbidden Stars now. Bus is going to have to come and not defend. But
that's what I say.
I know, and I don't want it to be like a bad thing towards him, like, because it's not at all.
No, I want to know. I want to hear his side, because my thought is
I would like to know. Yeah,
it sounds to me like everybody else just had a plan in place, and that it kind of. His actions were spoken for, that everybody, you know what I mean? Everybody else was like, hey, you do this, I do this. And at the end of every action phase, he was like, well, you know, I have to do what they said. So maybe he just didn't feel like he was having an impact. And also, I wanted to note that the reason you're bringing this up right now and not Benz, who was also a part of that, who also experienced and saw Bus do that same thing, is because you own the game. And
yeah,
that is heartbreaking. You know, I've been there, and it's tough.
You want everyone to enjoy it, because you want to share this with everybody.
Yeah, put all that time and effort, and then to
have someone
you really care about dislike it to that point, so such a visible way. It's a hard thing, and I think that if anyone's listening and you're getting into board games, it's going to happen. It's inevitable with whomever you
absolutely.
Play. And I mean, I think, and if you ever play with Bus, just make sure the game is tiling, and I think you'll be okay.
Just get a deduction tiling game, and you're fine.
All right, Rico, what confuses you, or what makes you happy?
I'm gonna put this in a happier note here, and just thinking about what confused me, and it coincided with something that also made me really happy. So I've heard about a bunch of games that I'm dubbing as unconventional games, and I don't think that the genre of unconventional games is new. If you go on Google and look up like weird games, Milton Bradley and old game publishers made some really weird shit in the 80s. Really weird stuff with weird components, but this day and age, we're making good games, and we're making good unconventional games. So for instance, the Article 27 game that I talked about earlier, Stockpile, two dry things you would normally never want to play a game about, you really want to play a game about now.
Yeah,
and that's a safer unconventional game. That's just a weird theme. And I think that's something that we've seen the last couple of years, of just strange themes. DC Petty, Xenon, Profiteer, you know, like, not something you would normally want to play a game about. But at the end of the day, it's kind of just a normal card game.
Yeah.
But we're getting really cool unconventional games. There was a game that came out last year called Knockdown Barns that this dude.
Yeah.
He made it with actual pieces of his burnt down, I don't know if it was not burnt down, but his like old falling down barn. And it's like a dexterity game where you build a little tower and you have to try and knock down the other guys. And that's with, you know, components from his backyard. And then the one today that really like solidified this as what I wanted to talk about was what Matt Leacock's new game is, a knitting game. And it's not a knitting game where you have tiles and you're just making words, or, you know, paperback a word game that just is a deck builder, right? It's not a weird theme in a conventional, what we know as a conventional game, but it actually has like yarn and string, and where you are faux knitting changes your objective in how you make the words. And I'm enamored with this idea of unconventional games with unconventional themes and unconventional pieces to do it. It's just so cool. And I think we're at that golden age of classic board games, what we expect those to be, and of what we expect to be really weird ones.
That's funny. So what is Matt Leacock's new game? I remember seeing the name of it.
I don't even remember the name of it, but
it's like it's literally knit something, like knit this or knit
fun or something. It has blocks and strings, and I don't know. I saw a couple pictures, and it literally looked like if you took your grandmother's basket and she has a pincushion and knitting needles and yarn, and you took it all out and put it on a table, and you were ready to play this game. That's what Sick. It looks like. Yeah.
So the guy who did Tragedy Looper's name is Bachfire. Uh-huh. He has a game coming out that's you have three different pieces of string.
Uh-huh.
And like you draw cards, and on the card is this shape, and you have to figure out how to make that shape with those strings, and there's like a timer.
That's cool.
And it's this like weird party game, and like there's like certain shapes where there's just no way you could do it with like, you know, string X, but you won't figure that out until you start doing it.
That's really cool. Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. Like that it's awesome.
Right. I'm excited to see something different.
And I just love it because it makes me confused, you know, at the onset, but then I delve into it. I'm like, this is, it's amazing. Brilliant. So can't wait to see more of them.
Awesome. All right. So anything else?
Nope.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. So today we're going to be talking about the different experiences that you have when playing board games. And I imagine for all of you out there that there's one or maybe a couple experiences that started you into this hobby, and hopefully that there's many more there that kind of that keep you here. And I know that on a weekly basis, I value the four guys, you know, sometimes five that come over, and every week I look forward to it. And it's more, and we've talked about this before, it's more than just sitting down to play a game. It's that time spent together with you guys. You know, Rico, when you were here, and I'm going to talk about a couple of them in a bit, like that was nice. There was like what, like 4 months where it was just me and you, and yeah. We would still be here till 3 a.m. like wasted and just playing Keyflower over and over again. Then that was back when you had maybe like 30 games and I had 5.
Yeah,
and just this. It sounds cheesy, but it does feel like a journey, and to have you guys with me is amazing, and it feels like we're on this together. And especially towards the end of the year, you see me at a bus really felt like, oh, like they just come now. There's no one day. It's just they just show up Thursday, 7:30, mm-hmm. and then we go. And we're there till 3, 2 a.m. So let's start at the beginning. Let's start with your intro experience. I want to start with you, Alfie, because you probably have the oldest version of this. Specifically, so I'm going to talk about hobby board gaming.
Right. We all played games growing up with various, you know, we all played Monopoly, Trivial Pursuit, or Cranium, card games, Tripoli, things like that, Go Fish, Old Tripoli. Maid. Loved Old Maid.
Wow.
These are games like we grew up playing. Uncle Wiggily for me, you know, I mentioned it before on the podcast. Love Uncle Wiggily. Pass the Pigs. But for hobby board gaming specifically, I remember mine was my junior year of high school. I played soccer in high school, and in the league we were in, it was in the winter time. This was winter of the 2007-2008 school year, my junior year of high school, and we had a soccer game later that night. It was going to start at like 6 o'clock, and I think this was a day where we maybe got out a little earlier, around 2 o'clock or whatever. And it was raining. I remember very specifically it was raining that day, so there was nothing for any of us to do until we had to meet up to get ready for the game. There was a guy, there was a church across the street from our school, and the youth minister of that church was really close with a bunch of the guys at our school. He was young, probably in his mid-20s, him and his wife, really nice, and they lived right across the street. So we, a few of us, because a few of the guys on the soccer team were close with him, we went over to his place, and he had like a little, like a shed-type room that's was like right next to the – it was next to the house, but it didn't connect, but like right in front of the like drive port. I don't even know what you would call it. It's basically just a little shed that was like a room though. And he had some shelves, and he had a like a table that's was probably like 5 feet long. So it's probably just shorter than this table we have here and about the same wide. And I go in there, and we go in there, and HeroScape is in there.
Nice.
We have
this could have gotten a lot worse.
Yeah, I was on edge.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, okay. There was a terrain battlefield set up, and it was just like the basic terrain. It wasn't like all the volcano or the ice. It was like grass and rock, and there were a couple like little layers. and then some ruins and some trees out there. But then on the shelves were just covered in like the figures. They went very specifically like on all the troop and army expansions instead of like the terrain expansions. And so they just had so many guys, and we played it for probably 2 hours, 2.5 hours. We just kept playing HeroScape games over and over again. And I had never played anything like this. I was terrible at it. I think I actually won. We all took Marvel figures and I was Spider-Man. Wow. And totally killed it. But it was so much fun, and I knew I had to have this game. It was my favorite experience up to that point with playing games. I didn't know there were things like this, right? Outside of trivia and like bad old board games. I went and almost immediately, within a few months, I picked up my first Master set. I ordered it off eBay, and then that wasn't enough for me. So I ordered a big terrain expansion off eBay, and then I started going. And this was still at the time when HeroScape was being released. And I'd go grab figure expansions. They were coming out, waves 8, 9, 10. And I'd get whatever guys I could, and it just turned into this amazing game that then allowed us to get into like board games. I remember my cousin came over one time and he had two games. One is called Settlers of Canaan, which is just like a Catan knockoff.
Yeah.
And Agricola. Well, we sit down to try to play Agricola, and after like reading all the rules and trying to go through the motions, had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
We were like, I don't know what to do with this. So we played Settlers of Canaan, had a ton of fun.
You guys probably didn't know how to do the breeding right, I would imagine.
Well, we didn't know how to do anything right. But also, we still didn't know how to do breeding right years later. But so, this was just my intro into this hobby. HeroScape on that like rainy day before a soccer game that turned into my cousin picking up two games, one of them being Agricola, and trying to play that after having never played a game. Really understood what a gateway game is after that and why you need them sometimes. And so it's like that is just my intro into this hobby of that we love so much, was by sheer happenstance, played some HeroScape and then played HeroScape with my family, and we loved it. And so we got into board games, and it's been just, you know, years and amazing games in play since then.
Really quick, one, that's probably a better story than I had thought out. Two, did you guys hear that Asmodee bought the rights to Catan?
Yeah, I did.
How much Asmodee
paid for that?
Recently, like a couple days ago.
So after they've already like released all the new Catan game?
Yeah, so Asmodee now owns the English versions of Catan.
Okay.
So any English versions of Catan will be released by Asmodee, who, if you haven't already heard, is now, I don't know if they're going to, but Fantasy Flight might start going by Asmodee North America.
I've heard about this stuff, yeah. The weird, and then they're trying to put restrictions on
online stuff. So we can talk about online stuff, but just it's crazy that they bought Catan, which, love it or hate it, that game sells.
The biggest game there is, for sure. That's the one everybody knows.
But back to you personally, that's actually a really, really great story. And one that hopefully Rico will be able to top. Go ahead, Rico.
All right. This isn't the first game. This isn't the gateway game that got me into it, but it's an experience that I've never had again since. And it might actually, like when I was thinking about it, it might be the last time that I ever have one like this. And hopefully not, but maybe. Easter Sunday 2 years ago or 3 years ago now, I had just bought Lords of Waterdeep. And I bought Lords of Waterdeep maybe 2 weeks before. And I took it up to Prescott, and my whole family was there. And I made them play Lords of Waterdeep with me. And I actually hadn't played it with anybody else ever. So it was my first time playing Lords of Waterdeep before I even knew that there was a genre of worker placement. What I was doing was even called worker placement. And I brought this game up there, and I made them all play it with me. And I played with my mom, my older sister, who hasn't lived in Arizona for 8 years, my two younger siblings. So the five of us play, which is an unlikely pairing. And that group, that full group, almost never comes together to play games that aren't party games, really, ever. So I just don't think that will like ever happen again. So we're up there in a setting that's not home playing Lords of Waterdeep, and I'm trying to explain to them how to do quests and how work. And I had never played myself, and it was, and I didn't know how to explain games. The whole thing was so all a borderline failure for so long. But then after round two, there was that little spark. And that little spark happened in my mom's eyes and in my older sister's eyes, who had never played anything, and in the younger siblings who were trying to be apathetic the entire, you know, up to that point. It was there in everyone's eyes, and I didn't know that this was going to happen. And we played the rest of the game through distractions of our cousins being there and my grandma being crazy. And like, we still got through this game. And I think that was the moment that I realized that this hobby could bridge borders, that I could make people who were not interested in a Dungeons and Dragons theme play a board game. I could, that traverse both ways could exist and could make people happy, and it was really cool.
That's awesome. I love the way you like the spark going off, like realizing like the way this game would. That's awesome. I really like that. I think that's really cool.
So I think
after I should have gone first.
You what?
I should have gone first.
Okay, hold on. So I think after that experience, I've not been afraid to pull people in, to pull out a game that people are afraid of at the beginning, because I know what can happen. I've seen it happen with that experience there. And since then, you know, I taught two guys who had never played games a few weeks ago, Orleans, and you should have seen their eyes at the beginning, and then 30 minutes into it, the change. I know it can happen, and I continue to see it, and that was the experience that let me know how quick that change can happen. And it's really cool when you are the one that bridges the border, that shows them what it can be and what's out there.
I like that you say that, because I am afraid to bring people in. Well,
it's such an amazing contrast to what we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
In the first section, which might be the best bridge between the two segments that we've ever had.
The only person – I've only ever gotten one person to, like, play – it was my ex-girlfriend. Like, we started playing Battleship together, and then at Thanksgiving of 2014, we played Love Letter. Me, her, my brother, and my little sister, we've all played Love Letter, and she enjoyed that. And so then we started playing, like, Ticket to Ride, and we played Tobago. And so it was, like, I was able to get her into things, I think, because she knew this was something I loved. And so she was doing that for me, which was, you know, definitely really cool.
And out of character.
But it was cool of her, but like, I can't get my two best friends that I've known since I was like 12 years old to play board games with me.
Have you tried?
Yes, they have absolutely no interest. Like, they will play, you know, the games that they've known all their life. They'll play take one, which is a game you take Scrabble pieces and you flip them all over and you get like two Scrabble piece things, and then you're trying to make like crosswords of like, which is it's just a fun like quick game. And then as soon as you use all your piece, you say take one, and everybody has to grab another piece, and it goes to the piece. Or a fun game where you're trying to build words,
sure,
which is actually like a cool idea, but that's it.
Official Bananagrams, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah. So I don't know what Bananagrams,
you have to know your audience, right? If that's the kind of game that they like, you teach them Bananagrams. Then you go to Letter Tycoon and to Paperback, and you build off of the things.
Well, that's what I was going to ask is, have you tried?
So I think what it is it's not that, oh, they want to play games like this. It's like they want to play those games that they know that are – like nostalgic, that they have always played their whole lives.
Even if there's something that's like,
but exactly. But you can approach it in that angle, right? So you're hanging out and you say, "Oh, let's play a game. Oh shit, I really want to play that game, but I don't have it. But I have this. It's just like it.
Just like it." That's fair, because I did play. I mentioned on the podcast before, last semester I played Catan with a couple of my friends.
Sure, yeah.
I had the expansions. I could probably get, especially like my best buddy at school, like he loves that game. I could get him to play with like the expansions that makes it a more like full game where you're starting to introduce other types of mechanics in there. Mm-hmm. And so then that could go to like something like, I might be able to get like a quick game of like Noirin with somebody of just like Spyfall, Codenames, like those are games I feel like you can play with a group of people that don't necessarily like board games outside of the things they know, that are, because they're party games, they're fun, they're short. You're not having to like do a whole lot of thinking. I feel like that's how you can bring people in. But even then, like, I'm afraid to try to play Codenames with people who don't know Codenames, because they're like, oh, let's just play, you know, Cards Against Humanity whatever. Yeah, like, or Phase 10. When someone's favorite game is Phase 10, I'm like, we don't have a whole lot in common with games, you know? Like, that's fine if that's what you like, because your hobbies are elsewhere, you know?
Yeah. But don't you think you could get those people to play, like, Antidote?
I don't think so.
Maybe in a big group, if I had, like, six people, I was like, oh, and we were, like, playing some card games. Like, well, let's try this game.
Or, like, Rolling America, Rolling Japan.
But you need something. It needs to be something that's a quick enough idea.
Exactly. Like, it's got to be fast.
Viva Java.
Yeah, there you go.
That, I feel like that's a good example of game you're like, throw dice, colors, set collection. Everybody knows what set collection is, you know?
Viva Java is pretty complicated, too, when you get down to it.
But not really.
Yeah, okay.
I feel like the way to bring people in is,
if you can get people to play Viva Java Dice, I think you can get them to play a lot of other games.
But yes, but I also agree, like you said, Rico, it is about knowing your audience, knowing what you can probably get. That also, and like you said, like being adventurous with it. You were adventurous with it. I'm terrible at that. So like that gives me a little hope to know that, you know what, I can get that. Maybe I can get people to have that spark, you know?
And then you just run into people who just aren't gonna do it.
Right.
And maybe that is your best friend.
That's my best friends. They and don't care.
I have my – actually, what's funny is my one of my best men – so I had two best men at my wedding. My one best man is actually way into board games now.
Really?
Not because of me. We both, like, discovered cooking without knowing it.
Okay.
And then we talked to him. We're like, hey, I started doing this. He's like, yeah. And then when I saw him again recently, we were talking about board games, and he was like, oh yeah, he goes to this board game cafe in Silver Lake. Oh,
that's
and
cool.
Like,
that's really
he,
cool.
He bought Agricola. Like,
I really like him. We should play with him. That would be
– yeah, let's play with him. Origins.
You met Jake.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, let's – well, meet up at Origins.
That would be amazing. He would absolutely go to that too,
because he's that
guy.
Go.
He just won't say a word.
Okay.
He's that guy.
All right, that's fine. That's
He probably actually doesn't even listen to this, because I tell him about it and he won't. But the other guy, Andy, like – he doesn't play board games. He doesn't. He likes movies, kind of, but he doesn't really. He likes to read, but doesn't read.
Yeah,
he's like that guy.
Yeah.
So I mean, you have your friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they have different things, but that's why.
That's why you have me and Rico.
I literally spend more time here than I do hanging out with like the guys who are my best friends in the entire world, because this is a hobby of mine that I absolutely love. And so it's like, I want to do this as often as possible. And so it's like, of course I'm going to be like with you guys, you know?
Yeah. All right. Sweet. I think that's a really, really interesting story.
It's your turn now.
I know. Mine is so not as good. And I feel bad because I try to fancy myself as the writer of the group. So my first foray into this kind of hobby board gaming was in high school as well. No, not even. Fuck. It was in junior high. And two of my friends from completely random areas both started playing Magic at the same time and both introduced it to me. And I remember being really excited because this one guy played Magic and I was playing with it. And then another friend came over and they're like, hey, I started playing this game called Magic. And I was like, oh, like I've heard of this. Those of you who listened to it know that became a horrible black hole that I went into for a long time. And I think my personality it is that kind of overindulgence, whether it's movies or reading or hobby board games, because I let go of Magic because I wanted to have a girlfriend. And then once I discovered board games. Yeah, it's when I got married, so then I discovered hobby board
games. Right, you got her snatched up. You don't have to worry about it now.
Snatch. And then
great movie, Jason Statham.
Once I discovered hobby board games, you guys can look at my collection, and it's
shout out to Guy Ritchie.
It's not the best collection in the world, but it's a bit large for a year.
That's what
she said. I'm pretty happy with it, but Alfie thinks it's a bit much for only buying games for 365 days.
It's absolutely. All right, look, I think about math it this way. All right, say we play three games a night week, like. Right?
Yeah.
That's 150 plays you get in the year.
Okay.
We can't play all your games twice.
Okay.
That's what enough. I'm saying. Like, and it's not that, like.
I meant 80, 89, or 90.
Yeah. Again, can't play. So it's like I think what it is, it's, there comes a point where I just feel like 300 games, who's that? Who, Vassal. Vassal, like, curbs it at 300. That alone, I'm like, I never want 300 games because at that point, I'm never going to replay games that I love. Like,
yeah, which I think we'll get into it in a bit, but I have loved this year so far, and all we've been doing is replaying games.
Yeah,
which has been great. Okay, but so after that, we'll talk about two experiences. Thanks to Mr. Rico Wasman here, the very first hobby board game I played was Legendary.
Nice.
The Marvel deck building game, and we played it at Rico Wasman's house after some tacos. And we played it with Princess, Lady Wasman, and Rico. And we this is, it's great because we left his house at 8:30. Because RC had to get to bed, and which sometimes at the pinnacle, Rico wasn't even coming over at 8:30.
Yeah,
there was one night he came over at 11, and we played Kingsport, but whatever. So that was Legendary, and it was I don't even know. It was a deck builder, which I had no idea what the fuck that meant. And the only reason I was able to grasp onto was I understood the act of a hand of cards and playing them and comboing cards together because I played Magic for so long. So I grasped
on. All right, yeah.
Okay. I was able to see, oh, this card works with this card.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really easy to grasp. But this idea that you wanted to pull cards from this stack to make your deck better than to curb cards out of your deck,
yeah,
it's totally new. So completely blew my mind. Twinsis was absolutely into it. And we went back the next week. And the next week, we played, which is going to kind of be a repeat, Lords of Waterdeep. This game is like kind of whatever now. Like I could, it's not anywhere near my top 10, but it was the first worker placement game I've ever played.
Yeah.
And it's fun. It's not a fun game. There's just better worker placement games.
Agreed.
And you outgrow it.
Yeah.
But holy shit, like you play it and you're like, again, you're like, now I've played Legendary and Lords of Waterdeep and my mind was just blown at I fancy myself quite a big nerd.
Right.
There's this whole subset of nerd culture that I had no idea existed. Worlds where you could be Spider-Man and Daredevil and fucking Cyclops, or the next week you could be a fucking paladin going through Waterdeep and like going on these quests.
Yeah.
And taking what's that other track called with the skulls? Gloom?
I don't remember.
But like you could make all these different, like there's all these worlds available to you, and I could do all these things. And what got it for me is I always kind of wanted to play RPGs, but I just knew I wasn't a good dungeon master.
Okay.
And I knew that kind of hinged on that.
Okay.
This was this kind of like you could play as these roles without having to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you do that in all these games, and that just blew my mind. And then just the social aspect of it, just the idea of like, oh, we're just a group of friends all gathering together. You're laughing and having a good time while you're playing this game that's really, you know, it's really interesting. You're using your brain, you're thinking. It's everything I really wanted. You talk about like, I love movies. In another life, I wrote for a movie blog, and what I miss most about that is I've never really had a group of people to discuss that with that outside of college, you know, where you go see a movie and then you talk about it with like a group of like 10 people and yeah, you argue about it. You have that every time with a board game because you're right there living it with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And you're discussing the game as you're playing. And afterwards you play it. Some people might not like it, and that's fine because, you know, boss, whatever you feel is fine with me. And it's just such an amazing social experience that I'm so excited to be a part of. But those two, absolutely the first ones. And then now, here we are, over a year and a half later, and I have about 90 board games.
There you go.
So thank you, Rico.
You're welcome, man.
I'm glad you introduced him, Rico. Because now I know you because of him. So it's like,
yeah.
I love that you guys got together, and then I get to be a part of this too.
That too, like you talk about, like, I love video games, but video games have never created the type of friends that this has. Except for the fact that arguably me and you have been family for 10 years now. But like, Bus is here, and Zeman's here, and you're here, and I met, you know, Lady Wasman, and I met Lady Wasman's friends, and I met Zeman's girlfriend, and I've met Diane, and like there's all these different people. Like you come and you bring this together, and it's that, like that brought people here, not Halo. Fuck Halo.
Well, yeah, and just to be clear, video games do that for some people.
They do.
Absolutely. It didn't do it for us.
You know, like they just culminate in like a slightly sad flight across the country.
Okay.
All right. So worst first play, Alfie.
All right. So I mentioned earlier we tried to play Break Aloud before ever playing games before, and it did not go well at all. I just wanted to throw that in there. There's two games on here. Both of them are yours.
Nice.
Spence. The first one I want to talk about real quick is Asgard.
Okay, yeah.
I had a terrible first play of this game. Just I didn't play well, and it was a very tight game in a way that I hadn't even really experienced before. And I played like some like Agricola, things like that, and it still that felt looser than this game did. Because you can get blocked out of actions because you have to choose where you want to go, right? You choose that god who's like favor you want to take. And if other people place their cards and you don't get to play yours, you don't get that action. So it's not like, oh, I didn't get the six wood this time. It's you don't get an action with that guy. And I felt like that was really crucial. And so that was, for me, that was just, it was a really bad first play. But I knew from there I wanted to play this game again. I knew like, this is a great game. It's really cool. Great artwork. It's got very interesting mechanics. I want to play this again, but it was not a good first play for me at all. Other one I want to talk about is Android Netrunner.
Oh, nice.
Our first play of this, I was the runner. You were the corporation. And I didn't really know. You explained the rules to me just fine, but I didn't really get like how the game like works really and like how to be good at it. And so I was doing things you probably shouldn't do. I think I realized at the end of the game, like, okay, well, that you build up a bunch of blocks and then you put in like your
agendas, yeah.
Your agendas, yeah. So it's, I realized then like that's what you're supposed to do, but I just had like a terrible first play of you and you just slaughtered me. So those are like the two games I think of when I think of just like terrible first plays for me, which are, I think, both great games and games I'd love to play again, you know? I just
– Well, we played Asgard again.
Yeah, and I love playing Netrunner again. I just had very bad first plays.
Awesome. So I think I approached it the same way. Is I don't – these aren't games that I went on to hate. In fact, both of these are in my top 10. One that I want to talk about is Keyflower. Keyflower, for whatever reason, across the board, me, Rico, and Lady Wasman, and maybe it's because like we loved Among the Stars so much off that first play – but the first time we played Keyflower, something didn't click.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we were too drunk or we didn't get the rules right or something happened, it just didn't click with us. Those of you who listen to the podcast know it went on to be just one of my favorite games ever and quite possibly the most well-mechanics designed game that exists. But that first play was just so confusing, and we spent so much time bidding on the tiles that we didn't use it ever, which is such a huge part of the game. That balance is what you need. And so that was Keyflower. The other one is Tragedy Looper. So the first time we played, Rigo came over. I bought this because I knew immediately I wanted it because of one, time travel, because fuck yeah.
Right? Because we here at DropTheDice.com, we love time travel.
Absolutely. and stay this. Keep listening because maybe there'll be something more about time travel.
Someday.
In my dreams.
If there is, wait for it.
Spoiler alert, time stories. Just kidding.
Seriously, by the way, like the when we talked about the tits of the lady and the center of the statues, that was amazing. I was cracking up when I was listening to that.
Yeah.
Aside from that. So Tragedy Looper. First game that I ever taught, one of the most complicated rule books. There's two rule books, and it's I don't even know how to describe it. It was just rough the whole time. And I knew, like, you could tell from reading the rule book that this was a great game. But just played it, we both were just like, I don't really know what's going on. And then also at two people, it's rough. Like, you really need that group for you to play off of it, for you to make those decisions. Because someone's going to see something that someone else isn't.
Absolutely.
So it was Rico playing all three investigators. It was me trying to be the mastermind.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt so bad because I was like, okay, I'd never taught a game before. And it was so – like, it is. It's so fucking complicated.
Yeah.
And there's simple things in there that now that I grasp, I think are easier. We talked at length about it as Tragedy Loop is one of those games where you have to be able to grasp the fact that you won't know anything at the start.
Right.
That you won't know what to do your first round.
And that is a very hard thing to do. Even after playing lots of board games, it's fair to go into a situation and be like, well, he moved a couple things. That doesn't really tell me anything.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do with that. That first
play, even if I play my cards, you still don't know, should I do this or this?
Mm-hmm.
You kind of just need to just go with it and know that, oh, eventually things start coming. And by the way, like even on the first loop, you start to figure things out.
Yeah.
But man, that first play of that game, and I remember thinking like, fuck, like, I know there's a game here. And then, do I have it on here as a... I don't. Then it went on to be that when we played with you, LED Wasman, and Rico, even though you were on the phone the whole time, that was just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, okay, I get it. This is just out of this world. Even with you and Bless and Z-Man, that was fucking fabulous. Yeah. As much as Z-Man was wasted out of his mind.
Yeah.
But that first play of Tragedy Looper and that first play of Keyflat, both of them were so rough. And I'm so happy that we pushed through that.
Mm-hmm.
And gave it another try. So I maybe the moral here is just because you have a bad first time, it's worth it to give it another go. So maybe we'll play Forbidden Stars this year.
All right. Well, so that was nice. That was a nice ending to that. Yeah.
Rico.
When I thought of my worst first play, it was less so of games that I didn't understand or I did poorly at, although there are many coming to mind. I've got Dungeon Pets and Kanban that just spring to the forefront of my mind as like...
To be fair, we were tuning a ukulele during Dungeon Pets.
Okay, so Dungeon Pets, there's my excuse. Kanban was completely...
No excuse.
No excuses. Just at the end of that one, no idea. No idea what I was doing or what a good strategy was or even half of the rules. But what springs to mind are kind of what you were talking about earlier, Alfie, and it's that like when you kind of feel like you have failed in a sense, right? When mm-hmm. somebody that you told somebody that you care about, hey, take this time to play this thing that I think you're gonna like, that I want you to spend your time on, right? And then they do, and it doesn't work out well.
Yeah.
I feel like that can be hard personally. So for me, the first one was Keyflower, which does have that good ending as now it's one of our favorite games. But that mm-hmm. first time was an easy 2 hours of us playing, and it ended and nobody liked it and nobody had any fun. And to be honest, nobody understood it. The other one, though, doesn't really have a happy ending, and that's City of Horror. If you
play.
That was one of the last times that we had Mooj and
Twincest
playing a full heavy game with us.
Yeah.
Oh. Something that they already knew.
Mooj loves Waterdeep and Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And we moved on from those games, and this is one of the last new heavy serious games that we played with them. And at the end of that game, we didn't understand it. I think that it's because of the rule book. It's published by the same people who do Ghost Stories, which is a notoriously awful rule book. I don't know. The game didn't click for us. Nobody had fun. It was a horrible first play, and it's the worst only play I've ever had.
Nice. That's actually that is heartbreaking.
Yeah, that was heartbreaking.
It's one that we both wanted to love, and just we couldn't figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Just playing it, you're like, it's one of those ones where you're like, is this it? Are we doing this right?
Right.
And he's flipping through the rule book like, I think we are. And then just not grasping that.
There's a game there. I'm convinced it's there.
Well, there has to be. I don't agree with Shut Up and Sit Down Up that Pandemic Legacy is the best game ever, but I agree with them that it's fun. They love City of Horror. It's rare that I disagree with them completely. They love City of Horror.
Okay.
So I'm sure there's something there.
Yeah.
you know, lots of people love City Horror.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't figure it out. And you could blame the crowd, but I don't know. I try to look past that sometimes. Like, I still like Betrayal, and we had a similar experience there too.
Yep.
But I still saw how fun that could be. Like, I think I still struggle to get it. Like, I'm willing to put City of Horror back on the table, but I didn't see it then. And I want to see it.
Yeah. I'm optimistic. You know, I want to believe, but it's hard. That one was, that was a rough night.
Sweet.
Best first play.
Okay.
The first one is the first game that after all of our game nights and buying all of these new games for so many months was the first game that we ever said, hey, let's play that again right now.
Euphoria?
And that was Euphoria. Yeah. The very first game that we ever like, yep, let's do that one again right now. And
I remember that perfectly. Like, just matter of factly too. Like, I even said, do you want to play this? No, just this again.
Yep.
Just clean, like, no, like, absolutely all I want to do is play this right now.
Yeah. That hadn't happened up to that point, and I think that was a special moment. I
still love Euphoria. Fuck Steven. Yeah.
Okay. The one I do want to talk about, because it's awesome, was the first and only time that I've played Agricola.
Nice.
Oh, yeah, nice.
The first game that, Alfie, that you ever brought of your own.
Yeah.
It's also week two, I believe.
We wondered, there's no way it was week two.
I'm pretty sure it was week two.
Well, the first week was Kingsport.
Yeah.
And then I don't think it was the next week.
I'm pretty sure.
We played it. Either way. Okay. Yeah, we decided to do Caverna and Agricola on the same night.
Because you were going to join the podcast.
Right. And I had never played Caverna, and you guys never played Agricola. So yep. I brought that. You brought Caverna, and we had a great time.
You're right. It probably wasn't, because then we went over to Aaron and Rico's the next day to record. Okay, whatever. It's fine.
But yeah, that was just an awesome first play that I instantly like understood, did well at, and even though we had, you know, really terrible scores, I actually won, and
yeah,
was just like really,
that was great,
proud of myself, because I felt like I knew his games, and it wasn't that I got lucky and was like, oh yeah, I know how to play this game. It was like, no, I get like what he does in his games.
Mm-hmm.
And like had a good understanding, I thought, at the onset of what to do in it, and I just was really satisfied with the game, with what I thought it was going to be, and how I played it. And it was a lot of fun. So,
that's awesome.
Thanks.
That's really cool. Yeah.
All right, cool. So you talk about three. The first one, I'll do yours. I'll talk about 20 seconds real quick. So Game of Thrones 2nd Edition, the first time we played, I didn't have high hopes, and I didn't know what to expect, especially after playing Warhammer 40K Conquest. And we've mentioned this over and over again, but holy shit, just right out the gate, this game had legs, and from the first hand, I was like, this is amazing. This mm-hmm. is so much fun. I care none about this universe, but this game is great, which is a testament to how good your game is that I could care less about the theme. But just the mechanics in that game are so cool. Mm-hmm. They're so much fun. The way you can attack, really, really cool, a lot of fun. And like I said, that's number three on my buy list right now, is to get a core set so that me and Alfie can fucking rage back and forth. Okay, so the other one I'll talk about is, or there's two more. The first one is Legendary Encounters. So we've mentioned this before, but literally it was midnight or so, maybe a little bit later, and we had done a night of gaming already. And Rico, like an asshole, decided to be like, well, I do have this. It pulls it out from the box of games that he brought to play. And everyone else was like, well, I'm going to go to bed. And I was like, in shrink wrap, he pulls out Legendary Encounters. In shrink wrap. And I was like, fuck. And he was like, if you want to play, I'm down. So we rip into it, and we're opening the deck. And we soon realize, horribly, like Tricarion, the cards aren't in order. As you're opening packs of cards, they're not in order at all. So he's reading the rule book while I'm trying to organize the cards.
But you don't really have an idea of how to organize them, because
I don't at all. I can kind of guess a little bit. And as he reads, oh wait, you want the cards that have like this symbol, you know, for this scenario. and we're going through, and we had luckily played Legendary before, so he was trying to skim to see what differences there were. We had to be six deep, seven beers deep by this point, because this was at a time where we were just like slaughtering six packs. But we stayed up all night, and we probably stayed up till like 2:30 playing that game. And to this day, it's my favorite iteration of Legendary. It's so cool. I remember playing it and like feeling maybe not scared, but you get a sense of suspense.
Absolutely.
As the cards move down, it's so much fun. Really, really cool. First time ever playing Legendary Encounters. I haven't played it again since, but man, I would love to play that one. The last one I'm talking about is the first play of Caverna. This was in the middle of us getting out of Waterdeep, starting to dip into more legit, kind of harder games. Seamed was over and Twincess was over. Everybody loved it. Twincess loved it. She's actually great at worker placement, which you wouldn't think. And it's one of those things where she chooses like when she wants to be engaged.
Right.
Like she loves Burgundy.
Right.
Which is not a
she
simple does.
She
game.
Loves Burgundy.
Like if you bring it's not a normal game.
Right.
But we all played Caverna and we all were engaged. And I remember just being like, this is so complicated, but I get it. And you know, Uwe's great at that. You mentioned Agricola. Caverna's still in my top 10. I loved it from that day on. Played it the second time and winning was amazing. Learning that we're doing breeding wrong was amazing. And also Z-Man was there. And of course, all he did was go on adventures to fight people.
Right.
And he almost won by doing that. Because he's an asshole.
I'm so happy that he lost, though.
He literally didn't build a single tile.
It is kind of refreshing talking about him. It is kind of refreshing when he goes for the crazy strategy and it doesn't pay off because you're like, all right, nice. Like, this one didn't work. Like, all right, because when it does work, you're like, of course.
Like in Blue Captors when he has 10 loans.
Yeah.
All right.
Funny thing about Caverna, actually, that was – if I look back at games that I have wanted to play the longest before I was finally able to play it, Caverna's the game that comes to mind because it came out in, what, 2012?
Sure.
And we played in 2015. Since that game, like, I knew that was coming out in, like, 2011. I think I knew that game was going to be coming out, maybe 2012. I wanted that game. I was like, oh, this is, like a crazier version of Agricola where like there's a cave now and you're a dwarf. Like that's so cool. Years later, I was finally able to play it. And so like, I loved it. You know, I thought Caverna was great. I went and bought it, you know? And so I definitely love that game, but that was one that I waited years to play. And I'm so glad I was finally able to. My best first play, I'm going to go with Tragedy Looper. It's funny you were talking about that earlier, Ben. So you were talking about how that was your worst first play, but then when we got together with me, Lady Wasman, and Rico, it was much better. I loved this game. I mentioned it so many times on this podcast, that feeling of me and Lady Wasman are both like, I'm like, I know I'm right here. You know, like I know Ben's must have messed something up. Like he must have accidentally like done something wrong. And then Lady Wasman's like, well, could it be this? Like, is this possible? And I'm like, no, there's no way that's possible. Ended up totally being that. But it was like, once we realized it, and I was like, there's no way we're wrong here. Like, we thought we had it all figured out. And then it was like the end of the night, and we didn't want to have to go through all of the loop again because we thought we had it figured out and he must have messed something up. And I kept asking – he was sitting there with, like, the rulebook. And I kept asking me, like, are you sure? Are you sure you didn't miss anything? Are you sure, like, you did everything right? He's like, yeah, no, like, I know. And I'm like, you're crazy. Like, there's no way. Like, you must have accidentally cheated. Like, there must be something wrong. That game just – I loved that experience. And the game is just a ton of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Like, love logic puzzles, love deduction. That is by far probably one of my best, like, first plays ever. It was just so much fun.
Nice. That's a really good one.
Sweet. Is that it for you?
Yep.
All right. Let's talk about Heartbreaking Loss. Alfie, let's stick with you on this one. Is it going to be my favorite win?
No.
Okay.
This isn't the game you played. My most heartbreaking loss is – it could be any number of times I lost this game.
Is it Game of Thrones?
It is.
Okay.
Game of Thrones, the board game. I'm going to specifically go with the first time we ever played this game. I don't think I had ever, like, sworn so hard at my brother in my life. I left the room. I threw my cards down. I walked out of the room, and I was like, I don't want anything to do with any of you right now. It came down to the last turn. It was going to be a battle between me and him. My brother's girlfriend, so she was not – she had a support out there. She could have supported either one of us, and she didn't think it was going to matter. She thought it was just like a throwaway thing. So she was like, I'll support him, not like for any reason, just to do something, to like support one way or the other. And he ended up beating me by one in this battle. And I was so pissed off and so like frustrated because it was like this, it came down to this. Somebody supported him against me. And it was like, I got so mad about it. All the times after that, whether me and him are usually the ones that are end up being like right there at the end of like the 1-2, who can get that last one, or and it usually comes down to like somebody supported you somewhere, and then it's like the reason you won was because you were supported. And so it's like it's gone both ways with us, but that was so heartbreaking. For the next 2 hours, me and him just were sitting around talking about the game and like our strategies throughout the whole game. And so it's like, it's kind of like a best first play, but also like just the most heartbreaking loss I've ever endured of, I thought I had it and I was beaten. And it was like, I was beaten hard. It's not a heartbreaking loss when you lose 10-0. It's a heartbreaking loss when you lose 9-10. Like when you were so close. And they just like when it goes down to like penalty, like shootout, or, you know, and it's like, they just got that one more than you, you know? And so it's like, it killed me, but I love it. And I love the game, obviously, but I remember that specifically. I remember getting up, throwing my cards down and leaving after swearing, which was an uncommon thing back then.
So in proper fashion, let's go to a quick tangent here. We haven't played this with our group.
No.
If we played this, would you severely outplay us?
No.
Okay.
You, Rico, what do you think? I think that you would, because you know the cards that are in every house, and they don't.
You can in the rules. You can look. You can always say, be like, oh hey, let me see your house cards before a battle. Going into the battle, you can look and be in someone and be like, okay, well here's his 4, here's his 3, here's his 2. He's got this guy with this power. Which one do I think he's gonna play? He's discarded these people. He's played. So you can always look at somebody's cards.
But you're reciting that off of the top because you know all of it. And even though that is the rule that you can look at the cards, there's a lot to take in there. And you don't have to think about that because you already know it. So I think it would be a severe advantage. You know how the battles can resolve. You know where the optimal places are to be, where the choke points are. When
it's not entirely true.
When to break alliances, which is a crucial
thing like in
that game. What are the best of the bidding things to win? And
no,
I feel like this would come down to you and Zeman. Zeman has, when it comes to something that like area control, he's got a.
I'll say this about because there's really two versions of the Game of Thrones board game. There's the Storm of Swords expansion, which is a completely different board. There's no water. It's only 4-player. It's actually the version I'm good at. Like, I'm really good at this version, and I love this version. You have, like, it adds a few more things. In the regular board game, I'm not that good at it. I've won it, but so have lots of people. The reason I don't think I would be an advantage is because, for the most part, most of us are pretty nice when we play games in my family.
Okay.
For an example, this will just be a quick example. In Ticket to Ride, you're going, and as soon as somebody runs out of their trains or has, like, 3 left, the game ends. Usually towards the end of that, you start giving people heads up and be like, oh, hey, let me know when like you just want 1 turn left and I can like build my last section. Like I finished all my tickets. And so for your turn, you might just like take random card draws from the top of the deck. For the most part, we can be kind of nice. We don't necessarily break alliances. So if I say, hey, I'm not going to attack you this turn, I'm not going to attack you this turn. I'm usually a man of my word in games. If I say, hey, I'm not going to attack you, I don't attack you. And I try to, you know, uphold that to an extent. But you could be like, hey, boss, I'm not going to attack you this turn. And then he could just, like, totally take you from behind. And so that – and that can cripple you in this game. So I don't
– I don't think I would mind that.
I don't think I would necessarily be like a big advantage.
I feel like this year is big on exploring the history that we have available to us. Mm-hmm. So I'd be excited to play this.
Yeah, no, I do feel always down to bring it.
Like I said earlier in the previous thing, if I lose, I'm probably having fun anyways.
Yeah, it's really fun game. Yeah,
so we have.
It's got a lot of intrigue.
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, what, nice.
Kill yourself.
Not this Thursday, but the following Thursday, we're going to have a Ted Auspect Day.
Nice, man.
Suburbia, Castles Back, you Ludwig.
Gotcha.
Okay.
I was like, I don't know who the hell you're talking about.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead.
A rehearsed look. And then we lock eyes over mutual love for Ted Auspect's castle.
And then all our D's get hard.
Wow. This is just a place I didn't think we were going with the boaters. All right, so I'm going to talk about my heartbreaking loss. And the one that just came to me, we mentioned really quick, is the time we played Noir with the thief versus the cop.
Oh, that was great.
And we got to the point where I just needed to steal two more items. And mm-hmm. I got it. I got one.
Mm-hmm. But I got
but
you.
But when I chose to steal that one, I was left open. And he got me.
Well, to be fair, it was a 50, and this is, I think, another reason to add to the heartbreaking loss. It was a 50-50 shot, and I guess, and I got it right.
Nice.
Yeah.
So it's like, if I'd gotten it wrong, he would have won. Because
that's the one I have three guys. You got two of them already.
Yeah. I knew you were between two guys. I just didn't know which one you were at that time.
And it was, for you, it was the same thing. It was like, one of you has the fucking item I need.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And that was, I mentioned before the podcast, so I won't go too deep into it, but like, I was shaking. I remember being like, it's not often that in a game I get actually nervous about a game. But my real heartbreaking loss is the first and only time I've ever played Twilight Imperium 3. So we played this at Cade's house, previously known as Elder Alfie, and I played so good. I just come off my Forbidden Stars win. And I think I won Asgard, and I was on a pretty good streak. So we go to play TI3, and it's epic, as of course it is. Although, I don't think we played for 6 hours. I think we played for four. Cade gets out to a really, really big lead at the beginning, or big enough lead. And as we're playing, but I don't give up. I don't give up. I'm turtling. I'm doing my thing. I'm taking battles when I can. I'm building up research. And the public objectives, I'm taking them as quickly as I can. And then I see it. Holy shit. I can get my secret objective and a public objective that'll put me up. Then on the next turn, I'll get the last public objective, and I'll win. And so I go for it. And it all hinged on one battle, and I got it. I was able to get into Mechatol Rex because I pulled this card that let me move two spaces with the whole army. Cade wasn't expecting it at all. So he was caught by surprise. Blah, blah, blah. I'm about to win. And we get to this point where I misread the rules, and we both got the amount of points that you needed at the same time. All I had to do was pull a different initiative card, and I pulled just a random one because I didn't think it mattered. But since he had a lower initiative, he crossed over the VP first and won. I literally just had to pull something different.
That was I can understand how that was so heartbreaking because it did come down to
a minor rules explanation of how you score points. Yeah. Fuck my life,
dude. That's super heartbreaking.
So here's how I look at it. I played a great game at this legendary game. And as much as I would love to say that I won my first play, I'm happy that I even, like, was a
You were, contender. Like, right there. Yeah, like, you were, like, the closest runner-up you could possibly be.
And, I mean, I more or less have a similar style. I don't necessarily turtle, but I build up and then attack. I don't jump in at all. I'm not brash, ever. Until City of Remnants when I'm the red player, but that obviously doesn't work. But fuck, I remember leaving that and just being like, I remember the drive home just being like, I lost that. Fuck, I lost. I really want to say I won it, but I lost it.
That, yeah, especially a game like that that has like legendary status.
Well, this thing, it's like, I don't know if I'm going to play it again.
Yeah.
I'm down to play it again, but like, I know it's not going to, like, that's your day. Like, that's all we're playing.
Yeah.
But that was that. All right, Rico, what's you?
It's your weekend. You like prepare. Nothing else in the weekend matters, even if you
have absolutely. I remember like
nothing.
And it was the worst part is I remember poring over the rule book because I'd played games at their house before and you kind of just get jumped thrown into it.
Yeah.
When I got there, nobody told me the rules for TA3.
Yeah.
You kind of started playing and I was like, okay, well, it's a good thing I fucking read this.
That's crazy.
That's something I noticed about Elder Alfie. We sat down and played Caverna once, and I think I explained like two or three things to him. He's like, all right, I got this. I'm like, what do you mean you got? No, you don't got this. I need to explain some things to you. All right, I read this rule book. You're going to listen to me. Like, and he did get it, like, because it's basically good. Agricola. But I think he also is the type of it's like he'll kind of like learn on the fly. If he has a question, he'll just ask and be like, well, what about this? And be like, oh, you can't do that. Oh, okay. But yeah, a lot of times he's not the best at explaining rules, but I think that's because like you explain rules almost every single week to all of us.
Yeah.
So you've gotten pretty good at like explaining to it. For him, he knows the game really well, you know, and he's a great teacher because that's what he does for a living.
Yeah.
But man, sometimes when he's trying to explain board games, I'm like, I have so many questions now, but.
Well, that's the thing is, it's like we just started playing, and I was like, "Can I ask these questions, or not?" And like, I knew enough, but like, you could read the rule books, but I was expecting to have somebody tell me the game first.
Yeah, well, it was like, but to be fair, when you played Seven Wonders with us for the first time, I think I explained a few things. You're like, "All right, yeah, cool, I got it."
It was just
I was like, "Oh, okay, all right, he's got it. Apparently,
yeah,
doesn't need to know anything. This guy,
yeah,
it's hilarious."
I mean, but like I had seen a million videos on Seven Wonders.
Okay. All right. All right.
Perfect. Rico, heartbreaking loss.
My runner up is also TI3.
Nice.
I had a fraught game over 6 hours and lost by one turn. I had it on my next turn and it really sucked. And we were actually, I believe we were playing wrong and we let the guy who won complete two objectives in the same turn. So it was like even more heartbreaking afterwards, knowing that it shouldn't have ended that way and that I possibly could have contested for the win. A couple of us were really close, but you know, in my heart of hearts, I felt like I had it. So that's my runner up. But my most heartbreaking loss ever was the first time that we played Descent second edition. I bought Descent and learned it, and the night before we played, set the whole thing up on my table the whole night before, read the scenario, the first two scenarios in case we played more than one, and then I must have sat there for an hour and like looked at, okay, so this is what the scenario is, this is what my objective is, like what, you know, monster groups do I want to play with, what cards do I want to have in my overlord deck. I did all of that planning so that when they came over, I could streamline the setup and know who I wanted and teach them the game and be as close to a real DM as I could. So I did all of that. It took hours. And then they came over and we played. And about 3/4 of the way through the scenario, they were getting steamrolled. And I pointed out to them like an obvious thing that they were getting wrong or not doing. Like, hey, you guys could go this way or you could do this. Thinking to myself, I've got this in the bag. There's no way they're coming back. Trying to like make it a little bit more enjoyable for everybody. So I did that and I lost by the skin of my teeth by like one dive roll. And it was just so heartbreaking that I did that to kind of bring them back in, give them that false sense of hope so that we all ended, you know, like, oh, that was a close game, even though, you know, I brought them back in. And I ended up losing, and it was so tragic. And I remember being so sad that night that I had put so much time into it and then let them beat me. And that was just the first of many, many, many losses in that game. I was plagued with bad die rolls as the Overlord and the Imperial in that game. I can't roll for shit when I play those games, and I lose constantly. It's so bad. And that was the night that started it off.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Let's stick with you. What's your favorite win?
My favorite win. Don't really have like any amazing victories of any like heavy games that I could think of, but I had one win that was really, really satisfying for a lighter game. And that was Sheriff of Nottingham.
Nice.
And I don't think either of you guys were there for this one, but it was the first time that Bus brought Diane over, and Zach was over, and Lady Wasman was playing with me, I believe. And I beat Zach so handedly that night that I'm pretty sure that he hates Sheriff of Nottingham. So handedly that other people were the sheriff, and I was telling them, like, Z-Man is full of shit. He has this or he doesn't have this. And I was right every single time. Every single time. Turn, their turn, I called him. And I got through everybody's defense. Like, every time I snuck something in, played it coolly. Every time I wanted to get caught, I got caught. I've never really, like, won a game that thoroughly. And it was really fun to do.
Sweet.
That game is just so rambunctious and wild that and, you know, I think it lends itself to those really amazing kind of wins.
I feel like every time I've played Sheriff, I thought I was in the running and just get slaughtered.
Yeah.
Like I feel like every time I'm like, I'm playing a pretty good game, and like I'm like, oh, I know I got all the apples or all the bread, or I know I got this, and then someone takes it from me in the last minute.
Yeah.
And so I can see that, because I know if – I don't think I've won, because I feel like if I would have won, I would be really happy about it.
Yeah.
That actually might be one of the best first plays actually too. Twinsess loves that game.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Okay, so for me, I feel the same way. I don't know if I've won like a huge game where I'm like, man, like I – or that I have a lot of those. I don't – you know, I won Forbidden Stars, which I feel pretty good about, because I feel like I played well. I semi-won TI3, but I mean, I didn't. But for me, like, I think when I thought about this, I thought about, okay, what game, like, did I really try at? And then I won because of my skill at whatever I was doing at the time. And I think it came down to the second time we played Asgard against Alfie, Z-Man, and Bus. And it was Z-Man and Bus's first time playing, and I feel like Drop the Dice is like the only supporters of this game ever. Like, we got to be the only podcast that bring it up on every single episode.
Definitely.
But it's so good, and it's so different. All of you out there, it's worth the money, because you can find it for like $14, because I did. Okay, so playing the second time, you really, it's so brain burning, it's so thinky, and there's so many things to take into account that at the end of it, what we were talking about earlier, how much did I beat you by?
2 points.
By 2 points. And you're just like,
I have a picture of it on my old phone of like our pieces 2 spots away from each other, and so it hurt.
So it's one of those games is you can you'll score as you go, but then at the end, it's pretty hard. Like you rack your points, right? You start doing moves, so at the end you'll score them. So you'll score points as you go, but then at the end there's all these things that happen, and you can try and math it out, but it's probably pretty hard. So you really just need to think, like, did I really like back the right people? So you're going through all the motions, right? Okay, so let's do these points. Fuck, he's 2 points ahead of me now. Then you score this other thing. Okay, shit, now I'm ahead by one. And you just keep going, and it's just tense as shit. And it was pretty obvious that Z-Man and Bus killed each other. They went after each other so hard that they were going to be behind. But man, me and Alfie were there the whole time as we were counting those endgame points. And fuck, it came down to the wire, and I had it. And it just – I knew I won because I played right, not because I got lucky. Mm-hmm. That was that satisfying.
It truly was one of those ones where that was another that was kind of up for a heartbreaking loss. Like, you asked me when I was talking about heartbreaking loss if it was going to be your best win, because it did. It came down to, I was like, I lost by two, and I thought I played a great game. Like, how could I have played? How could I possibly played better? And I couldn't. It was, he played a little bit better than me.
I played 2 points. A little bit better.
You had 100. In 2, and I had 100, I think, or 101 to 103, something like that. Of 2 points out of 100 is a lot.
Yeah.
Or so a little.
Is a little.
A little. A very small amount.
Oh.
It was impressive. Definitely impressive.
That's cool. I just like I've been excited about winning Mochikoro. I've been excited about winning this or that. Like, but that I remember being like, I did this. I didn't roll dice. I played this right. Alfie.
My best win. This was actually kind of a hard one for me. Because again, like I don't have that big epic game. I didn't win Forbidden Stars. I didn't win Twilight Imperium. These epic like 3-4 hour long games. I didn't win Quantum in the end, you know.
Was it Zeman after all?
Yeah. The one I want to make a quick mention of was the first time we ever played Dungeon Pets. I beat Z-Man by 1 point. That was so satisfying because that was one of the earlier times I played games with him.
And he had won everything that you played with him, right? Or did we just talk about it like that?
I don't know. I don't know if this was before or after the Quantum City Remnants night.
Okay.
Or if it was before or after Roll for the Galaxy. But I knew he was talked up to be this thing. And then like beating him by 1 point, especially because that was a game I didn't feel like I played this amazing game. I was like, I may do with what I had. Like I just happened, you know, on all of our first play to do the best. So that was really cool.
But you won the second time too.
I also won the second time. Probably Blood Rage is the wins I have in that are probably the ones where I know that I played a great game. Like,
yeah, the last one was
I won ridiculous. Because I made I won because my strategy panned out. Like,
yeah,
that's what we, you know. And so it's like that was really cool, especially like a come from behind win. In I think the first two games, I think I was almost always like just in the lead, and then at the end, so
the
I
first
like,
one
went
you
way up.
Slaughtered me.
Yeah.
Like you looped
the
board.
We were close to each other for most of it. And then at the end, I feel like I jumped way up. And then same with the second game. But in the third game,
I was
in the back.
Way in the lead.
Yeah.
And all I had to do was just take a look at what he was doing and attack you once or twice.
Yeah.
And I probably could have crippled your strategy. But no, I wanted to keep doing what I was doing.
And it was the closest anyone's ever been to me on that game.
Oh yeah!
Like before, I've usually just gone way.
If I would have scored one more quest, I would have had it.
Yeah. So those were all great. Like you said, it wasn't because I got lucky; it was because the strategy I implemented worked. But probably my greatest win comes from not a game I won, but a battle I won. Kind of like you were saying, you played Z-Man in Sheriff of Nottingham. Like you played him hard. I played Elder Alfie. Is probably my finest moment in a board game. We were playing the Game of Thrones Storm of Swords expansion, right? And it's my little sister, Sarah, Elder Alfie, and my mother and me. If you played the game, I'll explain real quick. I was Baratheon, my mother was Lannister, so we are supposed to kind of be in conflict with each other, but we were kind of doing a little truce. My brother was either the Greyjoys or the Starks, and my sister was the other one. And so, like, they're supposed to kind of be in conflict with each other. And then, but either way, it came down to Elder Alfie was going to attack Lannisport, which was on, like, the other side of the board from me. I kind of had some troops in the area, and it came down to he was either going to slaughter my mother in this game. Or what I did instead was I was adjacent to where his troops were, and he was going to attack the spot south of him to then be able to attack her, like, castle. I was in the spot east of him, and I knew I was going to be before him. If I attacked him, I'm going to lose the battle. Absolutely. He had a huge army, had a little army. But what he's going to do instead of going south just to like stick it to me is he's going to then attack the territory I just attacked from where all my troops are routed, and he's going to kill all my troops now.
Sure.
Knew what would happen. I was like, this is absolutely, I'm playing all the way off. You did it. It worked. My mother ended up winning that game. And it was so satisfying because I played the man, not the game. And that is, that's a special kind of win, you know? Because
well, yeah, you played a meta game.
Yeah, it was.
Well, that's like in Forbidden Stars. And I was like, I know what you're going to do.
You knew what I was going to do.
And you did it. And yeah. Then I leaned over and I'll always remember this. And I just told you, you're stupid.
Yeah. But like that was, it was so, I mean, it was for me, I think of that as being like my finest moment of I attacked him knowing I'm going to save my mother. I'm absolutely saving her, but it's also stopping him from like winning. Because I had no shot of winning that game. By doing that, I knew who he was. I knew what he would do, and it worked. He could have easily not done that, and I wouldn't have necessarily been surprised, you know. But it was the emotional and not rational decision for him to make, and it totally paid off. And I still think of it as like my greatest moment. That's the game where I have that picture of my mom.
Yeah, I've seen,
holding.
I've seen
she's got all like the tokens of the game.
Can I put that on the website?
And then she's got the little power. Yeah, sure.
Awesome.
Sweet. Send it to me.
And she's holding her Jaime Lannister like house card because that's who she used in the battle. And it's epic. And I love it. And that experience was amazing. So like that's my finest moment. It was not even a game I won, but a battle I won. Nice. And a battle I won by actually losing the battle and losing my guys.
Which is very blood rage. Which is probably why you're fucking good at that game.
Yeah. I just play you all.
Yeah.
That's awesome, dude.
Awesome. This is great.
Yeah.
I like talking about this.
Yeah, me too.
So a couple of other things I want to mention. I think playing Codenames at your bachelor party. Just like sublime.
Pretty much everything that night was amazing, and I considered putting some of that stuff on the list. But Codenames was just especially really good.
It was like, how do I describe it? It's not at all what we wanted to play.
Yeah.
But it was perfect.
Yeah.
Like we wanted, we going up to it, we were like, oh, we're gonna play Last Will. We're gonna get in this heavy euro and this heavy euro. Yeah,
we were talking about like all these like big epic games we wanted to play.
It was Codenames with everybody.
Yeah.
Mooch, Twincess, Lady Wasmid, Bussy, and it was perfect. It was so good. But I want to talk about for whatever reason, with all of you guys, there's these games we play at 2 a.m. And they're all amazing. So with you, it's obviously
Twilight Zone for you. It's just like,
it's for you, it's like months of playing Keyflower.
Yeah.
With you, we played this thing over here. We played Battlefront, Devastation of Indians, so many nights at the end of the night.
Yeah.
We would just play three rounds of Battlefront, just going through all the characters. With Z-Man and Bus, you guys out there, if you're listening, we play Seasons, and it's something about that hour. And if you're at least a little bit sober, it's so perfect. Even if you're past that, there's been nights where I don't know how we got to Keyflower, but something about that, like knowing that this is what you love so much that at 2 a.m. when you want to go to bed and you got, if you have anything to do the next day, but all you want to do is just get one more game in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so cool. And I'm so happy that that's what we have.
Agreed.
Well, that's all I got.
What I used to have.
just move back, man.
Just we'll, come home.
Yeah, just come home. It'll be okay.
Okay. On my
way. Sweet. Sweet. So that's all. That's all I got. Rico, anything to add?
I don't. Love you guys. This was fun.
Yeah, that was really good. Where can they email us at?
DropTheDicePodcast@gmail.com.
Sweet. And we have an Instagram that you actually updated recently.
Yeah, I had planned once the new year started, because I had a little time because I was still on break from school. I was like, oh, I'm going to start trying to do like one a day because I don't want to like flood it with all the pictures we have, because then one, that's annoying, and two, then nobody's going to see all of them. Yeah. So it's like, oh, just do like one game a day. Then I realized, oh, Rico, a lot of the pictures you sent, I have no idea what games they are. Like, and I went to my old phone and like emailed myself every single picture that any of us ever sent over anything or that I took. And so I have all that on an email. I will be updating that more regularly, but it's Drop the Dice is our Instagram. Go there, try to get updated a little more regularly, even though we don't. We got some great pictures though, just showing that like the fun times that we have and the great game nights we have.
You can find us on Twitter @DiceDrop. Yeah, that's about it. So, Bus, why don't you lead us out? This has been a great talk.
I'm going to say keep the fan mail coming, you know? Something we haven't talked about on air.
Yeah. We've had a couple of emails recently, which is super exciting. It's stuff that we'll talk about in a couple episodes here. But yeah, just keep emailing us. What was it again? Just one more time.
DropTheDicePodcast@gmail.com.
There you go. Email us your thoughts, your feelings, or if you want us to try your game, we'd love to do that for you. All right, Bus, head us out.